Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Captain Victoria Marino. Hi, Victoria. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to have been, I wanted to say knighted. That's not right.
No.
I'm so glad to have been promoted. That's excellent.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's your second appearance. You're moving up the ranks here. So we're here to talk about the episode 9 of season 8, Mr. and Mrs. Who. The original air date was November 12th, 1979. Now, of course, as we just talked about, Victoria, you've been on the show before. We don't need to get into your origin and what an origin it was, if anyone wants to go back and listen to the At Night of Rosie's episode. But I do have one question for you before we start.
Sure.
Since you've been on, since the first time you were on the show, have you written out the lyrics to Suicide is Painless on any other public surface in the last year?
No, I have not. I have not felt the need or anything
okay,
along
good.
Those lines,
good,
but
good.
It is still one of those ones that will randomly, and I still have an iPod, I'm not ashamed to admit, it is one of those songs that will pop up on my very, very random iPod music. And I'm always like, okay, yes, pausing everything, stopping everything, I'm in this now, and I sing along. It's great. It's a great song.
is it the instrumental, the TV theme, or the movie theme with the lyrics?
No, it's the movie theme.
The movie theme with the lyrics. Okay, all right.
Yeah, a friend of mine had, I guess Marilyn Manson did a cover of it.
Really?
Really, really.
I
Like,
did
it's
not know
listening
that.
To it's so much darker.
Well, okay. We're gonna,
but,
of course.
So she was like, oh, I'm familiar with this because she was obsessed with Marilyn Manson. And I was like, well, that's new and, you know, odd. But at the time, I was just like, okay, cool. So it was like a whole different, you know, this was like still when I was in high school. I found this out a few years after the whole guidance counselor debacle. And yeah, that was, I was like, oh, I kind of like it. It was very creepy. Like, definitely, Rob, you got to listen to it. It's weird,
okay,
but it's
I will
great.
check it out as soon as we're done here. I did not know that existed. Yeah, I mean, like, I remember the individual stories that guests tell me, but you know, as the episodes pile up, I don't exactly remember who told me what. You know, I mean, if someone's like, well, I remember somebody. So when I listened back to our episode and we started getting into this, I went, oh, that was Victoria who did that. It was the one about she wrote it when she was a teenager and the guidance counselor thought she was going to kill herself or something. Okay. So I'm glad it hasn't been a problem in your adult life. So
no.
As I mentioned, we're here to talk about Mr. and Mrs. Who. It was written by Ronnie Graham and directed by Burt Metcalf. Winchester returns from R&R in wretched shape, hungover, unshaven, totally disheveled. Hawkeye and BJ pester him with questions about just what he did while he was in Tokyo when he was supposed to be at a medical conference. The problem is, Winchester has absolutely no memory of his entire weekend, save getting caught up with the hospital's rowdy medical staff, which ended with the manager of a nearby hotel ordering Winchester to stay away from the establishment in perpetuity. But there's no rest for the hungover. Hawkeye and BJ drag Winchester to post-op, where a few of their patients are suffering from Korean hemorrhagic fever, a mysterious disease that attacks the kidneys. While trying to deal with that, Klinger develops some rolls of film found at Winchester's bag, which Hawkeye and BJ find hilarious. There's shots of Winchester walking around with a lampshade on his head, romantic dancing with an unknown woman, and more. A few hours later, the 477th gets a call from a woman who says she's on her way to visit. Her name? Mrs. Charles Emerson Winchester. While Winchester is in a panic over this mystery woman's imminent arrival, Hawkeye and BJ try to figure out a way to treat the young sick men with the fever. One of them takes a turn for the worse, and they realize that if they just stand around and do nothing, essentially the official directive from the army, the young man will die. Hawkeye and BJ, after extensive reading on the subject, come up with a possible solution involving a low saline IV solution. It's a risky move since it sort of goes against the army directive, but Potter decides it's worth it since they know the boy will die if they don't do something. Meanwhile, Mrs. Winchester arrives, a gregarious woman named Donna, and it quickly dawns on her that her erstwhile husband doesn't remember any of the weekend, even the marriage ceremony. But Winchester is relieved when she tells him that the ceremony wasn't official. It was performed by the hotel bartender, so they aren't really married. They both collapse into laughter, one out of disbelief, the other in relief. They spend the next few hours catching up on what happened, and Winchester admits that he likes this woman, Donna, quite a bit, even planting a gentle kiss on her. The next morning, Hawkeye and BJ see that their solution to the fever seems to have worked. The young man is stable, and his kidney output seems to have normalized. They did it! Later that day, the 477 throws a party to celebrate the medical victory and to officially dissolve the ersatz marriage of Mr. and Mrs. Chuck Winchester III. Margaret is the flower girl, and BJ, whom Hawkeye refers to as the Reverend J.B. Honeydew, performs the ceremony reading from a comic book. Okay, Victoria, this was on your list of like your one of your favorites to talk about from season 8. So why this one?
Well, there's a few reasons. I love good medical mystery, and I wanted to ask you, in your opinion, maybe not like the from what view it was supposed to be, but from your opinion, do you find the Winchester Donna Marie Parker story to be the A plot or the B plot? Like, is the hemorrhagic fever the A plot? Because I ju literally just watched this with my mom, and before I came on here, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, you almost see more airtime for the hemorrhagic fever, and it's more serious, of course. But I was like, which is the A plot versus the B plot in this episode?
I'm going to just by the fact that the title refers to the Winchester plot, I'm going to say that's the A plot. And I think it gets, I didn't measure it or anything, but I think it gets a little more screen time than the hemorrhagic fever one. And of course, they've already covered Korean
They
hemorrhagic
have.
fever
This is our
in
second or
season
third
four. Season four, the
season.
Soldier of the Month episode where Frank gets it.
Yes.
And there, that one, that episode was also that case was sort of the secondary plot. So yeah, I'm gonna go with Winchester being sort of the main plot. It opens the show and it ends the show, and it ends the first act break ends with it. So let's go with that.
All right, cool. 'Cause I was literally like, I can't tell. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Firstly, I do love a good medical mystery, and I know in the last time we saw the hemorrhagic fever, it was sort of we were still sort of like, what do? We just sort of let it run its course, and hopefully everybody's kidneys can eventually normalize somehow. And but I will also say that I kind of enjoy the episodes where Charles's ego is kicked down a notch. Like, or he's humbled, like, kind of, you are a human, let's not forget this. And he had obviously very pompous and egotistical and this, that, and the other thing, but like there are certain episodes like this one and Dr. Winchester, Mr. Hyde, which is another favorite of mine, where he's kind of like humanized for himself. Like he's brought back down to everybody else's level in a way, and getting blotto drunk is a very good example of that, especially in his case, and the fact that he may have accidentally married someone while being blotto drunk. So I appreciated that, and the humor behind it, of course, and his well, not I wouldn't want to say his shock necessarily, but just his whole interaction with Donna Marie Parker was lovely. When he figured out what happened and he really got to get to know her, I wanted to see more of her after this episode. Like, it saddened me that there wasn't more of her. And I know you said a gentle kiss before, but in my head I saw the two of them, and like I said, I just watched this just now, so it's very fresh. Their kiss was very like nom. It was like a very, very good seductive kiss, and I was just like, yes, like they would be quite cute together. But the whole thing, it was great, and I just overall I loved this episode, and I loved them finding out that isotonic saline was the solution. And the other thing is, like, I work in the veterinary world. I'm a veterinary assistant. So, like, I also appreciate the medical matters in that way, like, because I kind of sometimes I know what they're talking about, and it's It's cool because it's like, okay, yeah, like, but what do we do when a cat's kidneys are failing or a dog's kidneys? We put them on IV solution, and what would we do if all they were doing was like losing all their sodium? We'd put them maybe on sodium chloride, which is 0.1%, and this, that, like, I have like these things in my head. And so it's a very good episode for a few different reasons for me.
All right. I'd like this one. This is when I was rewatching it for the purposes of the show. And I've mentioned this on other episodes where like my memory of it is like of some shows, I'm like, oh, that's an okay one. It's not that funny. And then when I'm actually watching it for the purposes of putting down notes and coming up with, I'm like, oh, there was a ton of jokes that are really funny. And, you know, as everyone knows who listens to the show, I end the episode with a clip. And sometimes I'm like, wow, I have like five or six clips and I
Right.
can't, I have to kind of like figure out which one. I'm like, that's a good episode when I've got that, you know. Some are like really obvious, but some are like, oh no, this was actually really, really funny. And I like the ones where Winchester gets more to do, you know. I like that when he doesn't, he gets like two shows a season, basically. And so I like it. And yeah, we'll talk about Donna Marie Parker when we get to her. So as I mentioned, the show opens with Winchester arriving, and there's a voiceover from the PA talking about that they're getting a movie, a captured Chinese communist musical, The Imperialist Running Dog and the Showgirl, which is one. I love that. I love that title, and to me, it's up there with some of the best fake MASH movies that they've had to come up. It's not as good as The Field Pack, Your Canvas Buddy. That's still my all-time favorite one. But I like that most of the movies that play at the 477 are fake movies. And it would have been a nice kind of film festival to come up with these fake titles. But I just like The Imperialist Running Dog and the Showgirl. Like, I want to see that movie. That sounds fun.
I like that they started it with, I was surprised to see this because I feel like it doesn't happen often in the later episodes with like the background music playing over the PA anymore. It was Happy Days, the Japanese version, I think. And I was like, oh, that's so nice. Like, it's a callback to the earlier episodes.
Yes, right, because they often would sort of use source music, and especially that particular song and stuff, because that's used in the movie and as a bunch, and that is used a lot in the early seasons. So we then go to the swamp, and Hawkeye and BJ are sitting there, and he's rolling a ball of yarn. Hawkeye is like at an 11. Like he's kind of yelling in BJ's face about how bad the food is, and it's almost like, Hawkeye, okay, like and this is clearly early in the morning, like, all right, settle down a little bit. But he's kind of like screaming in Hawkeye's in BJ's face. BJ's like, okay, could we not, you know, all right, okay. So Winchester shows up, and of course he looks awful and he's disheveled in his tie. And they, of course, are going to give him absolutely no quarter. And he has to know, you know, they're not going to do that for him. And they ask, where are the presents? And he's like, I brought you no presents. And he's too disheveled to stop them from going into his suitcase. And we got one of the first great jokes of Hawkeye picking up a pair of stockings, and he says, sure, bring back the empties, which I think is great.
That took me until very recently to figure out what the heck he was talking about and why. Because I was like, empties? They're just, like, I always think that is like an empty beer bottle or something. I'm like, what? And then I was like, oh, they're stockings and they're empty.
I like all that. That's just a great gag to start off with. So they're going through all of his stuff, and they find a boutonniere with some rice in it, and they find a camera, and he says, "Where? What are you? You know, what were you doing? Where were you? Except, of course, you were nowhere near a monastery." And then when Winchester admits he'd love to tell them what happened, except he doesn't have the faintest clue, which of course Hawkeye and BJ find absolutely hilarious, and he's hungover, so of course their laughter is that much louder. Now, may I ask, Victoria, has you ever had a night like this? Have you ever had a night where you drank so much you don't remember what happened?
My friends lovingly refer to it as gin night. Apparently, at my house, apparently I berated everyone because we weren't playing gin rummy the right way either. So not only were we drinking gin, I was also teaching them how to play gin rummy because we play, cards. We do the adult card game thing. And I was like yelling at them because they weren't playing correctly. I was like, I have no memory of this. Could
So
someone put me to bed?
are you slightly like aggressive drunk? Is that what happens when it
I
goes
get,
on? You're
well, yes, I guess so, because I was like, oh, well, I remember, like, I always used to play with my grandparents rummy, and they were always in a rush about it. So put down your card, pick up your next card. Like, come on, what's taking you so long? That could be the Hungarian in them, I don't know. But so maybe that had something to do with it, was I taught them how to play, and then I was just really impatient. I have no idea.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, turnabout is fair play. I will say the most drunk I think I've ever gotten was when I was at a friend's party, and they had a house on a pond, and I drunkenly got into a canoe and fell out of the canoe into the water. And unfortunately, that first of all, I made an ass of myself. That's bad enough. And then the pond that was behind their house would often congeal with algae. Because it was like a man-made pond, and they didn't drain it at the right. And so I rose from this swamp, like I was Swamp Thing or something, and all my clothes were essentially ruined, including a favorite shirt that I was wearing, because they stunk so bad they had to be thrown out.
Yeah,
So.
there's a certain amount of pond that eventually just turns really quickly to mold.
Yeah. So that was not one of my finer moments of making an ass of myself by far. I kind of remember it. I wasn't so blacked out, but I the next morning I think that was probably the roughest night. So anyway, Winchester not doing well. Then they find two rolls of film, and they're very excited about that. And then you hear, I think it's BJ says, we can get them developed in X-ray. Now, how? How the X-ray machine is not a photomat. Like, what are they, like,
No.
how would they get commercial film reels developed in an X-ray machine? I'm kind of, every time I've heard that, I'm like, are those machines equipped to do that? I don't really understand that.
Honestly, I don't know the exact technology behind it, but it wouldn't make sense to me that it could happen.
Yeah.
Unless I don't No, I don't think it could.
Yeah, it's just because it's X-ray equipment doesn't mean it just works in all respects. Like,
Yeah,
I think you would have to like
it's not the
load the
same
film into
thing
a
as like
thing or something. I don't know.
it's not the same thing as direct photography.
Yeah.
And then I remember, Colonel Blake looking at the negatives of some reel or nudity of something,
Yeah,
something.
the porno that he got from the
Yes, and he
Havana
was looking at it
Tabasco
under the
company.
microscope,
That's
right?
right. Yes.
So I'm like, well, but then when Klinger does come back with the photos there, it was like it was done at a CVS.
It
Like
clearly worked.
they're, 4x6s.
Yeah.
How
Yeah.
did that
That,
happen?
yeah. It makes no sense to me at all. By the way, for some of you young enough, you may be wondering what the hell is a photomat? A photomat was a company in the 70s and 80s that had these little booths in parking lots of malls. And they were like freestanding. They were kind of like, I don't even know what you would compare them to nowadays.
Like a photo booth?
They were like a little store. But they were in a parking lot, like, and you drove up to them. And
Oh, I have like visions of this. Not that I've ever, I don't even think been to one, but like maybe seen one in a movie or
yeah,
something.
they've of course since gone away, but they were, and it was like a little, there was like a one person. It was big enough for just like one person. And you drove up and you gave them your film, and they gave you a receipt, and they were like, all right, come back tomorrow and you'll get your film. And I always felt bad for those employees, because I was like, where do they like go to the bathroom? Like, where do they get food? Like, they're in these tiny little booths. But they were called photomats, and they were very popular, at least when I was a kid. And then, of course, eventually, as places like CVS, like you just mentioned, started taking that over, they went away. But that was where you got film developed, was photomat back then. So.
That's so interesting.
So we then join Father Mulcahy talking to Corporal Shaw in post-op, and he's reading the Bible. And of course, Mulcahy is thrilled that someone is reading the Bible. And he looks at the parts that Corporal Shaw has been underlining, and it's the most salacious material from the Bible possible. They're talking about a belly like a heap of wheat, and two breasts, and thighs are like jewels and stuff like that. So we see that, Corporal Shaw is bored and he's got a lot on his mind and he's trying to find anything to entertain himself. So, he plumbed the Bible for the raciest bits he could find.
Which, yeah, I mean, I guess he had to have known where those were in advance, though. Like, that's interesting.
Now, Corporal Shaw is played by actor James Keane. And this is one of those instances where you see somebody and they appear on a MASH and they just, they're kind of a one and done and they never appear again. And some people, as we've talked about, have like one other credit and you never see them again. And then other people go on to amazing careers. James Keane is the latter. This guy has been in a ton of great movies. He was in Apocalypse Now. He was recently in the Francis Ford Coppola movie Megalopolis. He was in The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He played Detective Pat Patton in the Warren Beatty Dick Tracy movie, a movie I really love. So, and that's just a couple of his credits. Now, of course, he's like the 19th guy billed, but nevertheless, he has been working consistently for like 5 decades now. So I was like, good for him, right? That's great that he was working in this many big movies. After being just kind of this one-off in MASH. So good for you, James Keane. Mulcahy sort of is a little embarrassed, and then he kind of is gentle and he's like, can I get you anything? And he asks for a cup of water. And Mulcahy knows enough to say, well, let me look at your chart, make sure you can get that. And right at that point, the three doctors come in and he tells them Corporal Shaw wants some water, and they say, no, you can't have it. And he's got the case of Korean hemorrhagic fever. And as we talked about, they already covered this in the Soldier of the Month episode. And I go, what, like, did Alan Alda just not remember? I guess he had a lot on his mind. I mean, but like, it would be kind of funny to, did none of them on the staff go, didn't we do this already or something? I don't know.
Well, Colonel Potter does say it's their semi-annual, meaning it doesn't happen every
Well,
year,
that's
but
true.
and I mean it, this might have been a not a different version of it, but if it hadn't happened, to say it was like it happened in 1950 and then it didn't happen until 1952, then and it's not Frank anymore, it's Charles, so it's a whole new person to introduce to this this crazy disease. And it might have been they were I think they took it way more seriously this time
Oh,
as
yeah.
well, so it was it I think it was just like a whole different like ball of wax really trying to say like listen let's just tr make this no longer a semi-annual thing like there's got to be a cure.
That's true. They don't hit on it too much that it is like a regular thing. And yeah, as you said, they play it for laughs in the other episode because it's Frank who gets it, and of course Frank is pathetic and whatever. But the here they're really talking about, this guy could die from this. And then Corporal Shaw even says to Winchester, like, do you have it? Because of course he looks so terrible. And they're like, no. And Winchester says, no, my condition is self-inflicted. Hawkeye says, yes, the man's suffering from a poor case of bottle fatigue, which will be the title of an episode later on.
Another one
Rarely
of
do
my
we get an
favorites.
episode title in the dialogue, but there we go. So they kind of try and reassure Shaw as best they can. And then they walk away, and you hear Winchester say under his sort of his breath, he's a very sick man, isn't he? And then they say, yeah, there's two more cases to go. And as I've mentioned on other episodes, I love it when these three guys are like they go into like professional mode, because he's always kind of sparring against them. And I like it when they are the three, like this ragtag little shack hospital has three amazing doctors. I mean, Potter as well, of course, but like these three guys, and it's like when they are all together, I'm like, this is awesome. I love watching them just be doctors and be really good at their jobs.
Well, there seem to be like every once in a while before. I guess, I don't know, season 8 or season 9 or, well, we're in season 8 right now,
Yeah,
right?
we're in season 8. Yep.
So, I mean, we've had Winchester around and able to poke fun at him for a while and dealing with his ego for a while and such. And I know that it continues a bit, but I feel like somewhere in this season, they all become more of like a triad of obviously super different personalities, and they are complementary towards each other in different ways because they're not all the, it's not like Trapper and Hawkeye again kind of a thing. But I feel like there's more of like a brotherhood, even if it's just medically speaking. They're definitely like more sort of, there's more of a camaraderie there, I feel like.
I mean, Winchester thinks these two guys are clowns, but he certainly doesn't think that he doesn't think that they're bad doctors. Like, he respects their skills,
Yes.
which is great, right? I love that. And it's like it's sort of funny, like if you go flash forward, if we want to flash forward all the way to the end of the series, and like when they're all saying goodbye to one another, and like Potter says goodbye to Winchester, and Potter says, you're a fine surgeon, and Potter goes, thank you, thank you, sir, as are you. And it's just that simple little, like, we've never heard that, right? I can't think of another time when we've heard Winchester say, no, you're really good. Not as good as me, but you're really, really good. So they call it competence porn, where it's something where it's just people being really good at their jobs. I think that's what, like, The Pit. I don't know if you've seen that show on HBO Max. The Pit is
No,
kind
but
of that.
I want to watch all the medical things, so it's up on my list.
Oh, it's really, I loved it. I loved it. And the second season has already started. So it's really, really, really good stuff. So anyway, we then cut to Potter's office, and they're having a staff meeting. Klinger's kind of goofing around and doing the sort of grand intro. And he's like, now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker for the afternoon. And then Potter cuts him off. And he then says, Klinger says to everybody, "You've been a great audience. Good night, ladies and germs." And he walks out. And I love that Margaret gives him a round of applause, right?
I
Hawkeye
didn't
does, but
notice
Hawkeye's
that.
part of the sort of comedy gang. But I like that Margaret goes along with it. Like, Margaret's kind of lightening up a little bit.
Yeah, agreed.
Always
She
thought
doesn't
that
get
was.
nearly as offended as easily.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, really charming. And then I also like that Margaret sits behind Potter, kind of leaning back on his desk. So she's sort of like the co-host of this meeting, because Potter is talking and then she's like finishing his sentences and
Well,
stuff.
she kind of takes over. He's like, well, Margaret, Major Houlihan and I have been looking into this, and she's like, and this is what we found. Like, she
Yeah.
just takes over.
Yeah. I love it. I've said many times, I love their dynamic, right? And I like that she is just sort of takes over for him and stuff. It's just a great little thing. So, so they explain that it might be mites, and they're talking about what the official diagnosis from sort of I-Corps is as to what to do. And they said 10 to 20% of the people that get it are going to die. And Potter says, Surgeon General says that significant, says that number is significant. My word would be appalling. Which is, underscoring. It's like, yeah, these are real people to these guys, and they don't want to see 10 to 20% of them die. And so they start talking about how to treat them at stage one, stage two, stage three. Loretta Swit kind of gets the tough job of having to lay some pipe here of saying, to refresh, let's go through the steps of the disease, which is not the most elegantly written speech in the world, because it's clearly just for the audience, but she handles it pretty well.
I mean, you kind of have to. It's like you're going over your rounds, your daily rounds, and you're like, so this is what happens, everybody. Just in case everybody, anybody forgot any part of it, this is what's going on.
Yeah. So they really go through it, and they talk about, you can't give them back sodium, and BJ's like, yeah, but they're losing sodium by the pound. And Potter's like, yes, with potassium chloride and everything else, but they can't process it. So they can't the, you can't do this. Now
They
you
will literally die, drown in their own tissues.
now what can you I'm kind of dumb, but can you explain to me what all that means exactly? I've never been able to quite follow, despite it being laid out like this, exactly what any of this means.
So just a reminder, veterinary assistant, not veterinarian, but
Sure.
as it goes, dealing with as many, kidney issues in usually elderly animals, it tends to be like adding, that they pee a lot. They drink a lot and they pee a lot, and their kidneys are no longer functioning the way they're supposed to be. And in this case, I would imagine that adding any sort of like as much sodium as, they're supposed to have, and potassium and these kinds of things would maybe cause backing up of the kidneys, which would then cause, yeah, they could literally just everything would just be backing up and backing up. And even though they're thirsty and they are like, feeling like they're in a desert and they just want to drink something, all of the water that they have in them is probably, we're 70% water, right? So it's probably all, compounding into everything. So you're losing all of your nutrients that are so necessary for homeostasis of the body that adding any more of it, because you're losing it all, it doesn't, it could be it could be contributing to a backing up of things, which would be not helpful, or it could be just not doing any good. So.
So just because you're losing it doesn't mean you can then have it back a added back and it's just everything's fine. It's
At
no.
that quantity, correct.
Right.
So like the whole idea is like, we put kidney patients on fluids very often to make sure that they, and it's usually like isotonic, just like that, just to make sure that they don't lose too much sodium, potassium, these things. Their electrolytes are somewhat staying the same as at least the bare minimum, if you will.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Thank you. I've always had a tough time feeling, even again, I've seen this episode 10,000 times. I'm always a little like, wait, what? And so they bring up the kind of the crux of the episode a little bit is that the army is saying the official directive is no saline at all. And the doctors are sort of like, well, wait a minute, that's a little overkill, isn't it? And even Winchester says, what are we supposed to do? Nothing. He's like, we're physicians, not spectators.
Right.
But Potter is under, saying, look, if you go against the directive, you could be court-martialed, you could lose your pay, all this kind of. So we're setting up that obviously our doctors are going to do just that because that's what the show is. And then Mulcahy comes in and says that Shaw has now entered phase three. And they talk to him and he says, before I couldn't go, and now now I can't stop. And he's like, that means I'm getting better, huh, Doc? And I like Hawkeye's noncommittal, sure looks that way. Which is totally not true,
Right.
but he doesn't want to
Of
scare the guy. So I kind of like that he just sort of
course.
gives him that non-committal answer like that.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I was also thinking about like the fact that you wouldn't want to dilute anything with more liquid, because everybody's always like, I'm so thirsty, give me water, give me water. But like more regular water that doesn't have electrolytes or salt or whatever in it could potentially cause that whole drowning thing, because
Wow. Okay.
you're giving them regular water, which in under normal circumstances would be fine, but if you don't have enough sodium because you're peeing it out, then you're literally diluting any leftover sodium you may have in your body, which would be
Gotcha.
10 times worse. So I was just thinking chemistry wise, why also they were like, no, you can't have any water. And then this guy also, on top of it, he doesn't have an appetite either. So they're like, well, we can't feed you because you don't have an appetite whatsoever. Like, we're trying to feed you, but also you can't have salt. So they're like stuck between a rock and a hard place.
I remember in the Soldier of the Month episode, Mulcahy is the one who comes back from Seoul with like some of the details, and he mentions that a patient could literally drown in his own tissue. He says that. I remember that line
Right.
from that
Oh, is
episode.
that where that was from? I thought I was quoting this episode.
No, I think it's
Funny.
now it's that one where they talk about we don't know what how to handle it, and it's Mulcahy who comes back from Tokyo with like the latest information and stuff like that. So So the doctors kind of confer a little bit what to do, and Winchester says the nurses should we should have the nurses deliver something something every 30 minutes, yada yada yada. And there's not much else to do than just sort of wait. So then
Yeah,
we're back.
they're monitoring the sodium output and everything like that. They're monitoring all of that, and yeah, that's
Right. So then we're back in the swamp, and now we're on the A plot question mark. And Klinger shows up with the photos. He's going to show it to the guys, and I like Winchester sleeping. And they're like, "Look, let's be nice, let's wait, so we get Charles's permission to look at the photos." And I like that they lean over and just sort of scream in his face, "Can we look at the pictures?" And then they start looking at them, and they're of course we don't see what's going on, but they're Winchester partying. There's a great line about where he's got smiles painted on his knees,
I would
apparently.
really like to see that photo.
Yeah. And BJ has the line, "Toulouse-Lautrec must have been there," which is I like that line. I
So
never.
I wanted to ask you because I at the time I was like, who is that? And I was like, okay, I could Google it, but I could also just ask Rob. Is it an artist, I'm
Yes, he
assuming?
was a painter in the 19th century, and he was very small, like very diminutive, and so
Oh.
yes, that's he was a that that that's the joke, is that he's short. Like he was like I think he
Oh
was
my
like
God, that's so extra funny.
yeah I think he was like 4 feet tall or something like that. They
Oh.
he's portrayed in both the Moulin Rouge movies. There was the one from I think the 90s or the 2000s, the one with
Oh.
Nicole Kidman, and then there was one in the 50s as well, and he's represented in both of them. But yes, he was a famous painter.
Yeah,
Yes.
he's Toulouse, and I never even thought about it. Okay, yes, that makes
There
a
you
lot
go.
of sense now.
I'm sure I did not know who Toulouse-Lautrec was when I saw this episode as a child, but I think I just must have. It was another one of those jokes you just roll with, and you're like, "Okay, he must have been short." Like that's the joke. That's
See, in my
fine.
head, I was like, he must have been an artist.
Yeah,
I knew
that.
anything
Well,
about
right, there you go.
Toulouse.
Okay, that's and actually, it's just kind of funny. I just recently watched a movie called Can Can, which is a 1960 musical with Frank Sinatra and Juliette Prowse, because we were talking about Juliette Prowse's films for my other podcast, Fade Out, and that movie is set during that time, and at one point you see a little person walking from camera with his back to the camera, and Sinatra makes a comment about it, and you're like, "Oh, that's supposed to be Toulouse-Lautrec." Just a little side joke about that. That's Toulouse-Lautrec. So anyway, they're looking at all the photos, and they see that Winchester is being held up by this woman, and then they say, "Oh, that she's got a we never see her front. They never see you see her face." And then at one point, Klinger mentions, "Here she is throwing the bouquet," and they're
Right,
like,
and he
"Oh,
looks knowing. He's like,
yeah, it's starting to all come back to him, right?" So, and then I love that Winchester thinks those are the only copies, and of course Klinger says, "I got all the negatives for you guys and the Boston Herald." I love that. I love all that. Love all that stuff. And then he talks about this. This scene is cut in syndication. For me, I never saw it until the DVDs, where he's like, "If you guys have any, any dignity, any humanity left, any shred of humanity, you'll leave me alone." And then Klinger says, "My future's assured. Summers in the south of France, parole for my uncle. He wants to go to law school."
I love how I think it was Hawkeye. He just goes, "Oh, nice."
Yeah,
Like it's
nice.
a total side conversation.
That was I never saw those until I got the DVDs. I like that run. I just like the whole idea that Klinger's going to blackmail Winchester. I think that's terrific.
And I love that, like, Winchester, besides saying, "You swine," he
Yeah, you
like doesn't really have any
swine.
retorts about
Yeah.
it.
So then we join Hawkeye and BJ in the lab. And they're talking about Shaw's output, and he says he keeps putting out salt at this rate, we could lose him.
Right.
And they're sort of like, "Well, they're not what sure they're going to do." And then we're back to the swamp, and Winchester, his hair is incredibly poofy on the sides. It is like really, he looks like Larry Fine almost from the Three
It's
Stooges.
nicely conditioned,
It really,
I think. I'm just every time I see him, like after he's supposedly had like a shower, he really does look extra clean and like well coiffed.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
For, right. For someone who's, well, I mean, he's gotten a shower at some point, but yes, but he is still sort of, although, well, I don't know. Has he showered? I guess because he just got back this morning.
I
So
think
maybe
so
not.
because he also didn't shave. Like, you know,
Yeah.
he, I mean, he was unshaven when he got home and now he's shaven. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but the easiest way to shave is in the shower, I think.
Yeah, right. You would figure. Yeah. I don't know. It's funny. We're not sure the time elapsed here. And then, so anyway, he's laying there. Klinger shows up and he's like, "We got a message. There's a woman coming. Said she'd be here in 2 hours." And he says, "Does she have a name?" She certainly did. Mrs. Chuck Winchester the Third. And then we get this slow push in of the sleeping Winchester. And then it dawns on him and he opens his eyes. And that's our act break. So.
Yeah, he whimpers. He's like,
Yeah, he
"Ooh."
does like a little. So then we're back, and Hawkeye and BJ are on the case. They're doing all this reading. They see they've got piles of papers, and they're trying to figure out. Meanwhile, Winchester is, of course, only concerned with what's going on, and he's calling her an unprincipled little blackmailer. And he's like, she forget. She thinks that she's going to blackmail me, and she forgot that my the best lawyer in Boston. Practices law and he resides in my father's hip pocket. And I like BJ's like, sounds comfy. Like, they're just not taking this seriously at
I
all.
love that too. That's one of my favorites.
And they're not listening to him, right? Other than making the joke, they're just like, okay,
Yeah.
whatever. Because they're trying to do something actually kind of important here.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Winchester says, how could I have forgotten this? And BJ's like, what do you mean, how? You forgot an entire Tuesday. So then they realize that they go have to attend to Shaw because he's kind of entered the next phase. So they grab and they grab Winchester and they head off into post-op. And then we see Shaw and he looks really bad. Like, he's unconscious. His eyes are pupils, I think, are slightly dilated even. They're looking
Yeah,
at
he
him and
looks
he's pale and
shocky.
sweaty.
Or at least he looks shocky according to what the MASH people say as
Yeah.
well. Because other people in that show that they've been like, oh, they're in shock, have looked like that.
Yeah. So they all go outside and they discuss the case and they start arguing about the amount of salt. And then Hawkeye talks about an article and he says the treatment has always been high saline concentrates up to 5%. And he's like, I use less salt in popcorn. I can't follow this. I have to say, I can't follow what the hell they're talking about, but it's fine. They just, the ultimate point of the scene is, I-Corps says you can't use any salt, and they're saying, why don't we use a tiny, tiny, tiny amount? And
Yeah.
Potter's is like, let's review. This guy could, this kid, we could do this and he could die, but if we do nothing, he's definitely going to die. So go ahead. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, like BJ says, like isotonic saline is the same amount of saline that would be in natural blood plasma. So he can handle that because, and they say that he can handle that, like they know, because he's probably getting some plasma already.
Right.
So just
Okay.
in a
All right. Well,
different
that makes
way.
sense. So then the young woman arrives in the Jeep and the four doctors are there to see her. And Potter says something, excuse me for not observing the amenities. I've got to go inside. But if she wants to stay overnight, you can stay in the VIP tent. And Winchester says, she won't be staying. And Potter says, suit yourself. And then he leans in and he goes, but you're out of your mind, which is
I love that.
like.
Married though he is, he knows a good-looking woman, and
I
he,
like that Potter and Winchester could kind of be dudes for a moment, Potter's
yes.
just like, oh my, I don't know. She's, I don't know. It's Chuck, what are you thinking? So anyway, we're introduced to Donna Marie Parker, played by actress Claudette Nevins, born in 1937, passed away in 2020. A lot of very diverse kinds of credits. She was a voice on the Return to the Planet of the Apes cartoon. She is in the Julia Roberts movie Sleeping with the Enemy. She played a character on Electra Woman and Dyna Girl. She appeared in Star Trek Insurrection. So she's kind of all over the place in terms of the kind of thing she was doing. She's terrific. I like her in this, right? And I like the character.
Yeah.
She is someone that you could conceivably buy that Winchester would like and that she would like him back. They are equal.
Yeah.
She is not some little kind of chippy that he got really drunk on. I think it's a perfect performance for considering how kind of little screen time she has.
Oh, definitely. She was very complimentary to him, and I could see like she was very obviously charmed by him, but also like you could kind of tell she wasn't gonna be around for any bullshit either.
Yeah, I like her. I like her a lot. I think she
Yeah,
did.
she
I
was
think she did
good.
a great job. So they go back and forth and talk about the party, and of course he doesn't remember any of it. And then she says, "Well, you invited me here," and he's like, "I did." And she's like, "Well, it was more like, come live with me and be my love, and we will all the pleasures prove." And then I love when Chester goes, "Good heavens, that is me."
I know. It's like as if you needed more proof. Like, here you go. This was definitely you.
I love that. I love that he's like, yeah, that's kind of what I would have. That's my game. I would have done that. So I thought that was.
He's the poetic one, right?
He
He was
really
always
is.
calling Radar, like, I would tell her this, and this. I however, have no idea what you would do.
Yeah,
But
this is a great. I love this scene between the two of them because he's, of course, he's on the back foot here as he's trying to vaguely recall what happened. And he doesn't want to let her know,
right,
right?
and
He
he's being
doesn't.
very coy about it, and he's like, well, of course, we went to the Pink Pagoda.
Yeah. And then she's pointing all these things out, and then finally he sort of admits that she doesn't remember, and you know the fact that they did not actually get married. And then of course he is absolutely relieved at that, and she's like, the whole thing was your idea, and you know, and then he's and you actually hear like they kind of pipe in the laughter from the laugh track a little when they realize what. You know, like the realization that no, they're not actually married and they're laughing together and it's a great bit. And then it ends with a great where they have this conversation and then it ends with another great Winchester line where he's like, in the event that we're not married, would you mind answering an extremely personal question? No, of course not. And then he's, what is your name? And the way he sells that is so good.
It's like he's dying to know, which he makes sense. I mean, he probably feels so bad that he had this whole huge thing, was potentially married, and had no idea what her name was, at the very least.
Yeah, I love all that. That's and just his delivery of that is just fantastic.
It
So,
is. It was so funny.
so then we join our doctors back in post-op, and they are checking on Shaw, and they really think there's not much they can do. They just have to sit and wait. And they talk about that these little armies are fighting inside the guy's body, and there's really nothing they can do, but sit there. So then we go back to Winchester, and they're going. They're talking back and forth, and she's joking about, you know, and they say, well, she's joking about that she would have been like, had he died there, he would have been the Widow Winchester and stuff like that. And he talks about graduating from Harvard Medical School and how his, you know, the stuff with the wild stuff he did in his younger days. He talks about jumping in the river and things like that. And then, you know, they see they have a lot of chemistry,
Yeah,
right?
they
They actually
definitely do.
really get along. She's classy. She has the same, she talks about the Mikado. Like she's got a lot of the same contemporary references, cultural references that Winchester has. And
Yeah.
then he lays it on her and he says, well, at least I had the sense and the good taste to propose to you. And she says, you give the longest compliments I've ever heard. And then he responds with, well, then let me be more succinct. And that's when he plants one on her. Winchester's got some game, I would say.
He does, and that is like so him.
It's really
It
sweet. It's really nice. Yeah.
was really great, and you could tell he was like he was so charming, and I don't know, like at the two of them, they like such great chemistry.
Yeah. It's a really nice, it's really sweet. You know, we don't get to see the side of Winchester. There's only really going to be, you know, they did the Ain't Love Grand where he was in love with Suki, but that was a little different. But other than the season 11 episode, we don't really get to see him, you know, romance
Yeah.
anybody seriously. And we see that when he's, you know, when he wants to be, he can be, he's obviously quite charming. Obviously, he's highly intelligent. He's highly, you know, respected
Cultured.
and all these things. And Yeah, it's really sweet. It's really wonderfully played by the two of them there. And sensitively directed by Burt Metcalf. I mean, I kind of like that it kind of gets quiet and just, and
And they're
then the
having
response.
tea.
Yeah, they're having tea. Right. It's really, really quite nice.
Yeah, did that. I really like, I kind of, like I said, I wish that there had been more of their relationship going forward, even if it was just like occasionally visiting each other or something.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's not like they were I don't know, like we're having to like, oh, we got other Winchester women to write into the show. It's like, well, no, he's basically not going to date again until season 11. So yeah, they could have done this, but so now we're back in the back in the post-op, and we see it's morning, and we see that Shaw is actually on his way back to recovering. And while they're sitting there talking, he wakes up, and they're of course thrilled with that, and he says, "What do I have to do to get something to eat around here?" So as you mentioned, he wasn't even hungry, and so now that he's hungry, and they're thrilled. They're thrilled because it's worked. Their solution has worked. And of course, presume, I kind of wonder, what do you do in this case when the thing you did worked, but it was against army rules? Do you tell everybody? But then that means you're admitting that you violated army rules, but at the same time, you would want to tell everybody because it's like, hey, we have a way to cure this.
I would hope that Army Medical would take it better as like, hey, this is a solution. It worked for us. Maybe before they talk about it right away, they'll, try it on the other two guys that are almost in stage three and see how, make sure it absolutely works for them and then be like, listen. I realize that we broke your rules, but like considering the circumstances, he was gonna die without it. So, it was either that or we actually try something, and we tried something at the most minimalist amount you could, hoping for the best sort of like the lowest effective dose as it was, like to make this to at least help him to live and recover from this terrible thing instead
Right.
of doing nothing and then just having him die. Like, I'm assuming and I'm hoping that Army Medical, I don't know, maybe you could ask your you have a one of the guys that comes on here is a captain or
Yeah,
something.
we have a
I
couple guys who are veterans, yes.
yeah I would hope that they would think like, would the good of the many outweighs the good of the few or the what, like, so it would be a more of a like, okay, well, yay, that worked. Maybe we won't prosecute you.
Of course, Potter is the one who's going to take any blame because he's the commander and he gave them the go ahead. And of course, he can probably take the heat in a way that Hawkeye and BJ can't. So he can just say, you know what? Yeah, we did this. You can yell at me, but it worked. We're saving lives. So whatever.
Yeah,
So.
and they have such a great success rate that maybe their opinion should, be taken seriously, and what they find that worked, like when they made the kidney machine out of nowhere,
Right. Exactly.
that worked, and otherwise the guy would have died. So, probably
So
wasn't regulation.
no. So the episode ends with them sort of BJ and Hawkeye hugging one another and really that's one war that has a happy ending because they were kind of referencing the war going inside Shaw's body. So then we
Right.
come back for a kind of an extra long button scene. This is a little bit extended. Usually the button scenes are, like a minute. This actually goes on for a couple of minutes because they're all having a drunken party and they said, we're here to celebrate Shaw's release and to dissolve the ersatz marriage of Mr. and Mrs. Chuck Winchester. And I like that he's going cuddles, cuddles. He likes to be known as cuddles. by the way, Donna Marie looks great. She's in this
Yep.
kind of blouse. She looks absolutely fantastic. And of course, Hawkeye talks about, he says, dissolving a marriage will not be in line with the basic tenets of your religion. And a drunk Colonel Potter says, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I didn't know tennis was a religion. Harry Morgan does a great super cartoony drunk,
Is great.
when he's, pie-eyed. And of course, when just, I mean, okay. He's like, no problem. He's like, the bartender that married them was a druid. So okay, so there everybody is partying. You see Nurse Kelly there sitting next to Potter, which is nice. So then Hawkeye says, "Is the flower girl ready?" And we cut to Margaret saying, "Absolutely, a bouquet of four roses." Now, I'm going to mention this because when this episode was run in syndication in my local market in Philadelphia, and I was taping the episode so I could have them all, for some reason, my local station decided to run a promo for an episode of the Joan Rivers talk show over the footage of the MASH episode.
Huh.
They like you could see what was happening and you could vaguely hear the audio, but over Margaret talking is a guy going, "Later on tonight, Joan Rivers welcomes Boy George." And like, and I was like, "What is happening? Like,
That's weird.
what? Like, really? You guys needed a pro? Like, I what? Like, why would you do that?" And like, you know, of course, once the I got the episodes on DVD, I was so thrilled to have a clean copy. But now I'd give my right arm to hear that again because it's such a bizarre thing that they were like, "We have to get a promo in, and instead of cutting 10 seconds out of the show, we're just going to run the audio over the video of the episode." What a strange choice.
That is so strange. And unless you can read lips, you're kind of like, wait, what are they
Yeah,
saying?
what are they saying? What are they saying? And it's basically they run it just for the length of Margaret talking. And then we get back to Hawkeye introducing BJ, which he introduces as the Reverend JB Honeydew. And BJ pretends to be reading from a script from a like sort of sacred text because he's unmarrying them. And we see that it is just a comic book. Now, because I'm obsessed with such things, I always want to know what comic book is being shown in some movie or television. And you can't really tell. It's too indistinct from and it's too out of focus. But I looked it up, and someone on IMDb says that it's a copy of Beetle Bailey, which would make sense because Beetle Bailey was a war, you know, a service comedy comic book. So I don't know if there's any way they could know that. I just don't think you can tell by the artwork, but let's go with it. It's Beetle Bailey. So
Right, it sounds good.
yeah, BJ is reading from it, and I love that Hawkeye is kind of the Ed McMahon. God, this episode is full of old-timey references that no one remembers anymore. But he's kind of the Ed McMahon, and that he's standing behind BJ and just laughing at all of BJ's jokes, which I find very charming.
Yes, and they are very good jokes.
He calls Winchester
So,
a pickled amnesiac.
which is perfect. It's like, let's just recall the whole episode in like two words. It's excellent.
Yeah, so they say undo, and they go, "I do undo too." And then he says, BJ says, "By the power invested in me with the state of intoxication, I hear and I pronounce you man and woman. You may now ignore the bride." And we cut right as Donna Marie looks sort of vaguely offended at the idea that she's going to be ignored. And that's the end of our episode.
It's such a good one.
I love this
Amazing.
party scene. I love that
Yes.
they gave so much time to it. It's like, again, it's like a 2.5 minute scene. That's very unusual. And like you said, I kind of wish Donna Marie would come back. She would have come back once or twice, or at least referenced or something. But again, the show didn't really bother with that stuff. But hey, they could bring Scully back for multiple episodes. Bring her back.
Right. And this would have been like kind of a fun, a sweet romantic thing for Winchester, who, like you said, like didn't really have a lot of that going on. So, would have been nice.
Yeah, it's a terrific show. It's funny. It's got the medical stuff. As you say, it certainly tackles it much more seriously than it did on Soldier of the Month, which is sort of, you know, kind of indicating where the show is going in these later seasons, that it would take the medicine part of it kind of much more seriously, the medical cases. But I mean,
Yes.
you know, you could have seen something like this on, you know, Trapper John M.D., for instance. Kind of just the doctors
Right.
are confounded by this disease that they don't know how to cure, and they have to buck the system and yada yada yada. So, but
And all
overall,
they know about it is that it has two H's and two R's and no cure.
right, exactly. So it's a terrific show. And again, it was one that when I don't think of it as like, "Oh, that's greatest hits material," but when I watched it over again, I'm like, "Oh no, this is really funny. There's a lot of great lines, and all the medicine stuff is good." So, do you have a favorite line or joke from the episode?
Oh, that was such a tough one for this. just quickly Charles is still confused about what happened, and he's talking to Donna Marie, and he says, "Well, I certainly let my hair down." And then he looks up and he goes, "As it were."
As it
And I love that part just because I he's making fun of himself a little bit. It's cute. And then, of course, like funniness wise, the very end with the pickled amnesiac and the whole scene is just so perfectly done, so excellent. And I love how, Winchester's wearing the little bow tie necklace thing separate from his outfit. And it's just, I love like that whole scene. And then, there's so many bits and pieces to pick from, especially when Colonel Potter, oh, that was one of my other ones, when they're having their like medical meeting. And Colonel Potter was like, "Pierce, Honeycutt, it's nice of you to bring a cadaver." When you're done mooing,
Yeah, he makes that sound. He's
Winchester.
like, "Oh," and he's like, "Winchester, if you're through mooing."
There's so many great like one-liners in the show in general. So sometimes it's very hard to pick one, but yeah, it's a scattering of my favorites. What about
All
you?
right. Well, so my favorite, again, I always leave it out when we're doing this, the review, because I want to be able to just say it again when we get to the bottom, at the end of the episode. But I love it when they're examining all, Hawkeye and BJ are examining all of the stuff in Winchester's suitcase. And then after, Hawkeye has the joke about, sure, bring back the empties. And then BJ digs out a woman's stocking and he says he probably had to do an emergency operation, saving some poor chorus girl from sweating to death. I thought that was
Yes, that was excellent.
great. Wonderfully delivered by Mike Farrell. Some poor chorus girl from sweating to death. I just thought that always made me laugh very hard. So yeah, it's a good show. It's a really, really good show. Right in the center of the season, and like a great, nice guest performance by Miss Nevins. And so a terrific show. So, well, Victoria, thank you so much for coming back and talking this episode with me.
Well, thank you so much for having me again. This has been wonderful. I wanted to mention over the summer I saw Tim English, and we were talking about our shared time on MASHcast, and we were both like, "Hey, maybe someday we'll, when you have two guest speakers come on, maybe someday we'll be able to do that with one of the episodes." And I was like, "Oh, that would be cool."
That would be great. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. When season 9 rolls around, the two of you get together and let me know what episode you want to do, and we'll get it done. That would be great.
Yeah, I was just like, "Oh, that could be cool."
Yeah.
Because, it doesn't always have to be. I mean, obviously individual is very fun, of course, but if you know the person, and even if you don't, it's like we all have this one lovely thing in common. So
Yes.
great to
Yes,
talk about.
I learned that a couple seasons ago when I started pairing people up, some of whom had never podcasted together. The rhythms worked out pretty well because we were all there to talk about this thing that we love. So, but yes, absolutely. I would be happy to do that. So when season 9 rolls around, make sure to do that. That would just be great. So, well, thank you for coming back and thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, farandwaterpodcast.com. You can find me on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And then finally, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast, and there you're going to unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K., Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P., Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Schulman, and Mike Thomas. I really do appreciate the support. So thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week. But until then, that is all.
You really do look rotten, Major.
You think he looks bad? You ought to see Tokyo.